Welcome to Book of Boredom Podcast, Roasting Saints Edition number 21. General Conference has just been and gone, and I did all the research for you so that you don't have to find the juiciest, funniest bits.
Or the boringest. I've heard a lot of complaints that people were not very inspired.
Pretty much. You know how you always talk about the primary voice that Mormon women have?
Yes.
I found the most amazing version of that. Annette Dennis, president of the Relief Society.
That would make sense.
This particular woman went viral for saying that no other church gives better opportunities to women members.
And people were like, really?
Eventually she replied, like, thank you for all your comments and we are listening. And she didn't back down on any of it. From the recordings I listened to of General Conference, a lot of it was, go to the temple, wear your garments. You've got covenants to keep. And of course, when you talk about garments, it's always the women that lose.
I mean, because those underwear are so very much designed towards men's underwear to some extent.
Right.
And the women have to wear it. And it is fugly. It's the most unsexy thing that you could put on.
But it's also unhealthy, right?
Oh, yeah. It's like, have fun with those yeast infections, ladies. Because yeah. This summertime, that's happening.
This is not going to work out for everyone.
No, but they don't care.
I think they've got a lot of progressive Mormons these days that are like, oh, I'll just wear some yoga pants. And they've still got their sexy mum chic going on, not wearing the garments, but still calling themselves a TBM.
Yeah.
So I think that Jeannie's being called in to bring the ladies under the thumb. About half of her talk is about the garments and get into the temple and sign up for a new covenant if you haven't already. In her voice, you could hear the smiling come out. It's incredible.
Saccharine. It's childlike. Yeah.
As my two youngest children were growing, I discovered books that were entertaining and engaging, but also used symbolism in their stories. As we read together in the evenings, I loved helping my children understand the symbolism Jesus taught through stories and symbols. As part of the temple endowment, we are authorized to wear the garment of the holy priesthood, both a sacred obligation and a sacred privilege. My willingness to wear the holy garment becomes my symbol to Him. I invite you to choose a deeper relationship with God by making covenants with Him in the house of the Lord. Study the talks of our prophet, including the beautiful teachings and the footnotes of his talks, which most conference talks have.
Jesus taught through stories. I'm just so excited. So much emotion.
Wow. She's got a cadence as well. This is a very specific sound.
I'm going to train an AI on that voice.
If you go to Arizona and Colorado and some of the other areas in the
Morador.
Yeah, that church voice gets a bit sweeter than it is nasally.
Oh.
And all of my cousins and my aunt have this super sweet voice. And I really wish I could describe it because I can't even recreate it. And I honestly think part of it is just because they've all interbred to some extent. Their noses are all the same. But that is a very good example.
So that was Saturday at 10 a.m. 2 p.m. they had Susan Bednar's husband, because we don't mention his name, remember?
Oh, my God.
And someone on Reddit commented that he sounded like his speech was written by ChatGPT. And that's probably because he's rumored to be a Terminator sent back in time to destroy orgasms or something.
Oh, I love it.
He's a robot. Anyway, on Sunday, 10 a.m., Dallin Oaks brings garments back again. And temples, temples, temples.
More temples.
And of course, think celestial.
Oh, God.
Which is that thing that Rusty came up with. They're all sucking his cock endlessly. It's like, we get it. You like him. There's this other guy, Ronald A. Rasband. He actually rattled off a whole bunch of things that can happen to you. And what's the response? Think celestial.
What does that even mean?
I don't know.
Like,
it's such a cop-out.
You found yourself trapped under a semi-truck and you're bleeding out.
Think celestial.
I'm thinking tourniquets.
Right.
Like, not celestial.
Don't get to the chopper. Get celestial.
Oh, God.
His whole talk was about words matter. But you know what? The meaning of words change. You can't stop it.
Yeah, language is fluid.
I bear my witness that our living prophet, President Russell M. Nelson, hears and speaks the word of the Lord. President Nelson has a way with words. When you're confronted with a dilemma, he said, think celestial. When tested by temptation, think celestial. When life or loved ones let you down, think celestial. When someone dies prematurely, think celestial. When the pressures of life crowd in upon you, think celestial.
I mean, what are they saying by that? Like, nothing here matters? Well, that doesn't help feed my sister's kids. That doesn't help me put dinner on my table, pay for the gas.
It really doesn't.
I hate this. To me, this is no different than the 1-800 call a psychic people. They said these guys are not as entertaining.
I'd rather listen to your tarot cards than this guy.
And these guys charge 10% of your salary. And there's a dispute as to whether it's gross or net. But either way, it's 10%. God, they can't even get somebody on a zip line like the goddamn evangelicals. They could have somebody going from that Moroni statue at the top, just like Tinkerbell does every time you go to Disneyland. Like, put on a show, people.
Make it pop.
For 10% of my salary, make it pop.
Somebody said, didn't they used to fill the conference center? And I was noticing on the videos, there were heaps of empty seats.
Really?
Yeah, and I looked on some old photos of general conferences, and they certainly have the ability to pack out wherever they're holding it. And it certainly was not packed out this time. I don't know how they think that Dallin Oaks promoting garments and going to the temple is going to bring people back.
That is not a winning strategy. Ever since people could Google and find out what those underwear look like, nobody wants to go there.
Absolutely. The last thing that I wanted to talk about with General Conference was Rusty's talk. He mentioned about 15 new temples, but one of them was in my backyard. I live pretty close to a temple, but they're going to build another one in my city.
Are you serious?
Apparently they own a whole bunch of land in the arse end of town.
They own land everywhere.
I mean, do they own the whole world? There needs to be some sort of self-limiting factor. You can have as much land as you like, but the more you have, the more we're going to tax you.
Yeah.
So that it just gets harder and harder and harder to maintain ridiculous amounts of property.
But then the companies just split off, but you can still tax them.
Right. Imagine if the Catholic Church was taxed worldwide. Wouldn't that have minimized the brain damage?
I mean, you would imagine maybe we'd have better roads. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they can pay for the roads. They're using them with all their kids.
Now, for the instance, the Mormon Church, they're building very expensive churches, but they're using my roads that my taxes paid for. They're getting the use of my roads for free.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that's right, because I don't think that they're benefiting the entire community. They're only benefiting some Mormons.
Right.
And not even all of them. And especially not the lady woman parts.
No, definitely not.
So it's like, really, the whole thing is that there's a good argument to be made that they should be taxed just like any other business, because they are acting like any other business.
Something that came out last year, and there's a hard copy that came out in February this year, is a new version of the Book of Mormon that is annotated. Now, they've made an annotated version before, I believe, but this is brand new. It's not released by the church. It's just like a private Mormon who's written it.
Like, what did they annotate exactly?
Well, I hop onto Amazon, because normally you can see some sample pages.
Uh-huh.
Nothing.
Really?
It gives you, like, the cover, and that's it. It's like, I want to see what it says.
Yeah.
At least some idea. And I'm not going to pay money for this whole ship.
Yeah, I don't want to give money to that stuff.
How do you annotate something that is 1,000% expanded with waffle anyway?
You just keep self-referencing, right? All the things that you've written about and that the writer that you're writing about has written about themselves, and then like other books that the church has endorsed that you could write about yourself and other things about the same things, right? right? There's a lot of really smart people in Mormon church. A lot of people went to BYU and a lot of them got pretty decent educations, although you can get a good education at a bad school and you can get a bad education at a good school.
Right.
But I think that the odds are stacked against the students at BYU in some regards when it comes to medical issues and gender and psychology and all the other sciences. So you have people like this that are doing these annotated versions of whatever.
Yeah.
Because there's been so many Mormon scholars who have studied the religion, but within the confines of the church approving.
Yeah.
If you started annotating the Book of Mormon in a way that clearly shows all the contradictions, the church is not going to endorse that, and the church is going to excommunicate you.
Yeah.
They've purged people before who were scholars.
What is it, the September 6th, they call them?
It was a while ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
They want you to be smart, but they don't want you to be real smart. They want you to go get a good job that pays well, but they want you to be just dumb enough to give them 10%.
They should have made the front cover of this annotated version a top-down photo of like a waffle maker, because they're taking waffle and making more waffle.
Yes. I mean, I think waffle means something different to you.
It means a lot of verbosity. Does that not mean that in the U.S.?
No. And here it means you're waffling between two positions, flip-flopping.
Ooh. Ooh, that's interesting.
But I like the way you're using it, because it's like you can get a waffle on top of a waffle, a waffle, a waffle, a waffle.
That's a waffle sandwich.
Waffle has a word sound to it that makes it sound like a bluff.
Pretty much.
Totally.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. So Saints 21, the talking heads on it, Jennifer Lund, she's a director of the historic sites for the church history department. And Sarah Hiring, of course, she seems to be on a lot of them.
Our favorite.
She has that wonderful voice, which I'm kind of getting sick of.
It's not as bad as that lady we
heard. It's not as bad.
Mormon women who talk in real life don't always have that church voice.
Oh.
In my imagination, Sarah probably talks one way in church and another way on the podcast, and then maybe a different way when she's getting her nails done by somebody of a different race than her.
If only we knew you. Oh, Sarah, come onto the podcast and show us all of your accents.
Talk to me like I'm a primary.
Don't do that. That's horrible.
I know.
Oh, dear. So the first clip that I wanted to point out with this, I've just called Oliver and Joseph Get a Divorce Over the Finances, a tale as old as time.
Yeah.
So the situation actually really goes back to Kirtland and the failure of the Kirtland Anti-Banking Society. Oliver lost a substantial amount of money in that, as did Joseph and many other saints. In the wake of those challenges, he decided to sell the land that he owned in Jackson County in violation of his covenant to consecrate his goods for the building of the kingdom.
So the High Council is investigating Oliver.
And they're also investigating other members of the presidency who have also sold some land. The High Council excommunicates them, but they don't do anything with Oliver because he at the time is assistant counselor in the first presidency. So they don't really have stewardship. So they wait for Joseph Smith to arrive in Missouri.
Oliver chose not to attend the hearing, but he sent a letter for Bishop Partridge to read in his defense. He once more insisted that he had a legal right to sell the lands, regardless of any revelation, covenant, or commandment. He also resigned his membership in the church.
God, can you blame him?
No.
Everybody lost all that money and they want him to give more. At a certain point, he's like, okay, I don't really know how much I believe in this anymore. Now we're talking about my livelihood. It was all well and good while we were all making money.
Uh-huh.
I'm Wikipediaing him now because I kind of think he's an interesting character, right? Ooh, have you seen what he looks like? He's got a very striking face.
Better looking than Joseph anyway.
Oh, yeah. But I can't blame him.
Yeah. He totally had a right to sell his own property to try and break even. Joseph invents communism and lo and behold, people, it sucks. Communism always sucks. It sucks, sucks, sucks. All right, let's move on to the next amazing clip. So the church has a lot of land in Adam und whatever the fuck it's called.
Right.
I wrote it down here. Adam und die Armen, which I believe
is like Eden.
He must have made that word up.
Well, he made up a lot of words. He was good at that.
Davies County has not yet been surveyed, so they can get land cheaper just by squatting on the land and then developing it. Joseph Smith goes up with an exploring party, and while they're there, Joseph has a revelation.
This was the valley of Adam on Diamond, where Adam, the first man, had blessed his children before he died. In this valley, Joseph explained, Adam would come to visit his people when the Savior returned to earth, as foretold by the prophet Daniel.
The Latter-day Saints had an important settlement there, although brief. Over many decades, the First Presidency has purchased significant amounts of ground there, which is leased to local farmers. It's very pristine, very quiet, very meditative.
Very boring.
Have you seen the picture on Wikipedia for this place? This is not what I would pick for a Garden of Eden.
It's just nothing.
Boring. You know what? These people have never been up the California coastline. That is fucking heaven. It's not in freaking Missouri, 5 miles south of Jameson.
These people have also never realized that the stories about the Garden of Eden predate the three major Abrahamic religions. This is somewhere over in Mesopotamia, if anywhere.
Right. No, this is not an impressive part of the world. This could be a toxic dump site. It could be anything.
It could be.
I mean, it could be a soccer field.
The way they talk it up in the episode is it's on a river, so it has really good access.
Apparently, the language that is used to give the name of this land, I'm looking at this Wikipedia, is like, it's the Adamic language.
I know.
The name was also the
name of the language.
Thanks, celestial patients. Like, don't worry about the details.
Right, that's what I'm doing wrong.
That whole thing about Joseph Smith and the first version of the Book of Mormon that one lady stole, and that he had a remake. Just think celestial. And the whole thing of like him getting shot because he was in jail for doing things that were illegal.
Think celestial.
He's in heaven now with all of his wives.
He likes to get celestial on a regular basis, if you know what I mean.
Oh, God. Let me share this screen with you so you can just see how pedestrian. What is the word for this place? Like.
That is so boring.
But technically, this is the place that Adam and Eve were exiled to. So, I mean, they had just left California and they ended up here.
And I bet there's a lot of mosquitoes, too, if it's on a river.
Oh, yeah.
That would drive me mental.
I don't find that appealing.
No.
It's interesting that he had that revelation so quickly.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He can just get a revelation like that. God was really pouring him out at that point.
Right.
Funny how it doesn't happen anymore.
Think celestial.
All right, so next clip. Oh, this guy, Wilfred Woodruff. He was a missionary, but he couldn't get his family saved, so he was quite persistent, and this is what happened.
Wilfred Woodruff joined the church very early, I think 1832. As he went on missionary journeys, he would stop to visit his family and try to teach them, but it was never received very receptively. He is persistent. He is eventually able to convince them. And so on this journey, finally, he is able to baptize his father and stepmother, and I think one of his siblings and some neighbors and friends.
They're like, we believe. And he says, let's get on down to the canal. And he just gets it done.
He likes getting it done, Gigi.
This one doesn't count. They didn't really mean it. They're sick of hearing him.
Willie's dad was just like, go along with him and he won't come back for another 10 years, all right? Next. So this one I called Latter-day Bikey Gang because of these Danites.
That's right.
I think many of our readers will have encountered something foreign in this chapter, something called the Danites.
I was one of those readers who was totally surprised by this group of people. I'd never heard of them. Can you tell us about them?
This was a secret group formed by some Latter-day Saints in Far West who were on the more militant side. They wrote a document to threaten the dissenters if they did not leave. And so that is what inspired those dissenters to leave.
What did church leaders know?
They knew about it and apparently approved of some of their tactics. Probably not all. Joseph Smith later says that much of the testimony about the Danites that was delivered at Joseph's trial was not in the hearts of the First Presidency.
Later on, the Danites become fictionalized.
The very first Sherlock Holmes novel actually has Danites in it. Everything bad that happens in Utah is blamed on Danites. Yet there is absolutely no evidence that the secret society existed in Utah in any way. It's very short-lived, just a few months in Missouri in 1838.
Really? Because there's a lot of people that think they're still around.
Yeah.
She could be right.
There was a lot of violence going on in the frontier time.
I'm surprised that Sarah didn't know about this. She sounds like she's born and raised in the heartland. She's got that surname of one of the apostles.
Right.
How does she not know her own history? How does she not know about the Danites? How does she not know that they were a pivotal part of this bit of history?
I didn't even know that there was like a Mormon war.
Oh, really?
We don't talk about that. And everything when I was younger was kind of couched in Joseph Smith was persecuted.
Oh, so persecuted.
Nobody looked into the legal side of what was really going on. His arrest records were not part of the church doctrine.
The last one, this is a story about more than one black person having the priesthood way before the church took it away and specifically said that black people couldn't, and then in their divine wisdom gave it back again.
Right.
What the fuck?
Back before there was rules about who could have the priesthood, it was really like anybody who wanted to join.
One of the people that I was so glad to read about in this chapter was Elijah Abel, a black member of the church who received the priesthood and even went on a mission.
And he was not the only black man who was baptized during that era and received the priesthood and went on missions.
You can't say that this is a progressive revelation to just return to what you were originally. This is just unprogressive racism.
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways. Did you want to read Alma chapter 3? There's 27 verses.
You want me to read the prologue here?
Go for it.
The Amalekites had marked themselves according to the prophetic word. The Lamanites had been cursed for their rebellion. Of course they had. Men bring their own curses upon themselves. The Nephites defeat another Lamanite army. About 87 to 86 BC. So Jesus Christ had not yet been born, but his grandparents were rambling around. And it came to pass that the Nephites, who were not slain by the weapons of war after having buried those who had been slain, now the number of the slain were not numbered because of the greatness of their number. Oh God, none of this makes sense. After they had finished burying their dead, they all returned to their lands and to their houses and their wives and their children. Okay, so the Nephites, who were not slain, buried the people that were slain.
And he said they buried them twice after having buried. And then after having buried.
Joseph, it's just...
I can just imagine him hunched over his hat, doing it real slow and dramatic-like to Cowdery.
Yeah.
But at a certain point, he's going to be like, dude, like, let's just stop the pretense. Like, let's just get through this quicker.
Yeah.
So, okay. Now, many women and children had been slain with the sword, but no swords have ever been found in America.
That's right.
And also many of their flocks and their herds, and also many of their fields of grain were destroyed, for they were trodden down by the hosts of men.
How did they get so many people? It just doesn't make sense at all.
All those dead people with all that armor all over the place and all those swords. Boy, I can't wait until they find that archaeological site.
Right.
That'd be crazy.
They must breed asexually. They chop an arm off and then it turns into another person.
Right. You add water.
Right.
And now as many of the Lamanites and the Amalekites.
Amalekites. I like that.
God damn it. Who had been slain upon the bank of the river Sidon were cast into the waters of Sidon. And behold, their bones are in the depths of the sea, and they are many.
We've already mentioned that in the last chapter. It's supposed to be so many that it turned into dry land or something.
Maybe like a day had passed between those two chapters and you kind of forgot what he had talked into the hat.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
So take it away.
And the Amalekites were distinguished from the Nephites, for they had marked themselves with red in their foreheads after the manner of the Lamanites.
That doesn't make sense, but okay, keep going.
Where do they get this red paint from? They just seem to be able to summon anything out of anywhere. They can summon a sword, they can summon some paint, they can summon hosts of armies, progeny in fields. Nevertheless, they had not shorn their heads like unto the Lamanites.
So they had hair, but red foreheads.
I guess.
That's a look.
It's a look. Now, the heads of the Lamanites were shorn, and they were naked, save it were skin, which was girded about their loins, and also their armor, which was girded about them, and their bows, and their arrows, and their stones, and their slings, and so forth. How did they stand?
Think celestial.
And the skins of the Lamanites were dark, according to the mark which was set upon their fathers, which was a curse upon them because of their transgression and their rebellion against their brethren, who consisted of Nephi, Jacob, and Joseph, and Sam.
Like Sam in like the Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Like, so there's all these guys and then a hobbit who just wants second breakfasts.
Who were just and holy men. Verse 7.
And their brethren sought to destroy them. Therefore, they were cursed. And the Lord God set a mark upon them. Yea, upon Laman and Lemuel. And also the sons of Ishmael and Ishmaelitish women. And this was done that their seed, yikes, might be distinguished from the seed of their brethren, and thereby the Lord God might preserve his people, that they might not mix and believe in incorrect traditions which would prove their destruction. That is miscegenation.
Mm.
Some men are marked to the women, they don't have babies with them.
Right.
And it came to pass that whosoever did mingle his seed with that of the Lamanites did bring the same curse upon his seed.
If I'm reading this right, they didn't have to wait for the kid to be born to know they're shooting seed that is of a certain color.
Right. It's not the same.
Don't mingle it. You'll get gray.
They've tried to say that when verse 6 says the skins, that they're talking about like the animal skins that they would wear. They're not talking about the skin of their body. Don't gaslight me. I know what I was taught as a youngster. In context, it is clear that this is about people who are black.
Right. And they mentioned there wasn't much of the skins anyway.
Right.
First, they talk about them being completely naked, and then they say, except for these skins that they wore about them. So What else could they be talking about?
Right. This is one of the more interesting chapters. In the modern version, they footnote it. Well, they're really talking about interfaith marriage.
That's right.
That's what they're trying to say it is, instead of saying, don't marry a black man. This is the treasure.
That is Mormonism.
The shame of the Mormon text, right? You've got to get through 215 pages before you get to the ultimate racist bit.
Verse 10. Therefore, whosoever suffered himself to be led away by the Lamanites was called under that head. And there was a mark set upon him. Wow. What a way to say that, huh?
Yeah, I know.
And it came to pass that whosoever would not believe in the tradition of the Lamanites, but believed those records which were brought out of the land of Jerusalem. Little hint, that didn't happen.
Right.
And also in the tradition of their fathers, which were correct, who believed in the commandments of God and kept them, were called the Nephites, or the people of Nephi, from that time forth. What an amazing run-on sentence.
Wow.
And it is they who have kept the records, which are true of their people and also of the people of the Lamanites. Oh, good on them.
Now we will return again to the Amalekites, for they also had a mark set upon them.
Yay!
They set the mark upon themselves.
Ooh.
Yay! Even a mark of red upon their forehead.
Let's repeat it.
Thus, the word of God is fulfilled, for these are the words which he said to Nephi. Behold, the Lamanites have I cursed, and I will set a mark upon them, that they and their seed may be separated from thee and thy seed from this time henceforth and forever, except they repent of their wickedness and turn to me, that I may have mercy upon them. Oh, that is so narcissistic. And again, I will set a mark upon him that mingleth. They like to talk about seed a lot. Mingleth his seed with thy brethren, that they may be cursed also.
If he thought you could explain away it before, he's going to double down and go, and again. I really don't like the way he's using the word mingleth.
Yeah.
It just brings up icky images of seed mingling.
I know. Nobody's talking about the egg.
Yeah.
Right? This is just a lot of homoerotic
fan fiction.
What is it when somebody's like fixated by seed? I mean, I'm sure there's a subgenre of some kind of fetish that really focuses on seed.
It's a seed mingling fetish.
I mean, it's probably not going to involve a lot of women.
No.
It's going to involve a lot of ejaculate.
Different colored ejaculate. I don't know what they're going to eat first and make it different colors, but...
I don't know, but I really like rainbow colored pastels, everything. I mean, their bathhouses must look amazing. I don't know what Joseph was about, because mingling two seeds does not make a baby.
No.
You really need the lady bits involved.
Oh, he's going to double down again.
Oh, God.
And again, I will set a mark upon him that fighteth against thee and thy seed. And then 17. And again.
And again. Oh, my God.
I say he that departeth from thee shall no more be called thy seed.
Oh, God.
Give it a break, Joseph, and I will bless thee, and whomsoever shall be called thy seed.
Ugh.
Stop talking about the seed. Henceforth and forever. And these were the promises of the Lord unto Nephi
and to his seed. What would that sound like if we replaced every word with sperm? And again, I will set a mark upon him that fighteth against thee and thy sperm. These were promises that the Lord made unto Nephi and to his sperm. Maybe somebody should give Joseph a thesaurus.
Absolutely they should. Now the amlicites, or them titties, as Mike would say.
Ask your doctor.
If them titties is right
for you.
Knew not that they were fulfilling the words of God when they began to mark themselves in their foreheads. In their foreheads.
Yeah, in. That's the second time he uses that.
They got the paintbrush and just shoved it straight in their skull.
What does that even mean to have, you know, in your forehead to be marked red? If that's a metaphor, it means maybe you're full of rage. Maybe right. They're berserkers.
Right, and if you're not beforehand, if you stick something in your brain, you'll definitely be retarded afterwards.
Right.
Nevertheless, they had come out in open rebellion against God. Therefore, it was expedient that the curse should fall upon them.
Expedient. Almost like it's expedient for the white man to find a black man to blame on things and to turn that black man into an expedient excuse for all the crime in America.
Right.
It's also expedient to decide that all of the people that were here in America before us, that they should move so that we can use the land expediently.
Oh, he likes to be expedient.
Now, I would that ye should see that they brought upon themselves the curse.
He's still talking about it.
Mm-hmm. And do you notice how he couches it in an almost defense? Like, we didn't do it. Like, they brought it on themselves.
I'd love to know how they annotate this in the annotated version.
Right. And even so doth every man that is cursed bring upon himself his own condemnation. Okay. I mean, your logic there is sound, I guess. Now it came to pass that not many days after the battle which was fought in the land of Zarahemla by the Lamanites and the Amalekites, that there was another army of the Lamanites, God damn it, came in upon the people of Nephi in the same place where the first army met the Amalekites.
So there should be even more skulls in the water or something.
Right, you'd think.
What?
And it came to pass that there was an army sent to drive them out of their land.
Verse 22. Now, Alma himself, not anybody else, being afflicted with a wound, did not go up to battle at this time against the Lamanites, for he was a coward.
Mm.
No.
Well, he had a wound.
Right.
This is a new development. I don't remember hearing about this before. Okay.
But he sent up a numerous army against them, and they went up and slew many of the Lamanites, because that's how you treat people you disagree with. And drove the remainder of them out of the borders of their land. Oh, that's right. Get off my porch.
Uh-huh.
And then they returned again and began to establish peace in the land.
Now that they've killed everybody.
That's right. Being troubled no more for a time with their enemies.
Because they killed them.
Everyone was dead. It was very peaceful on that day. Now all these things were done. Yay! All these wars and contentions were commenced and ended in the fifth year of the reign of the judges. Take us home, Gigi!
And in 1 year were thousands and tens of thousands of souls sent to the eternal world that they might reap their reward rewards according to their works, whether they were good or whether they were bad. Santa gives gifts to everyone.
This is so blatant.
To reap eternal happiness or eternal misery according to the spirit which they listeth to obey, whether it be a good spirit or a bad one.
Oh.
For every man receiveth wages of him whom he listeth to obey. And this according to the words of the spirit of prophecy. I'm not the one saying it. Therefore, let it be according to the truth. And thus endeth the fifth year of the reign of the judges. Jesus Christ, did he just say that?
He did just say that, but he forgot about it.
Yeah, that was at 25.
He wanted to put some fire and brimstone in there.
He went for another 3 more verses and then ended it again to make sure we knew.
Wasn't that riveting? We are getting through this book, JJ.
And, you know, here's the thing. Some of these chapters are nice and short. Like, Alma's not doing a sturdy. Oh, wait. No, Alma 5 is going to be a doozy.
Oh.
62 verses.
Christ.
Alma, you were doing so great for a while there. You know, we're going to have a big group of people for those.
I'm guessing the wound doesn't kill him. He stays around.
And talks a lot.
And he sounds a lot like Joseph. Lovely talking to you, and I hope that your workload decreases.
I know, no kidding. All right, I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
I guess this is my new normal.